Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Now, maybe part of the problem is that the NCAA, which controls the college basketball tournament, does not control the college football playoff. The CFP is its own thing. The bowl games, they're run by the Bowl Association. So, you know, maybe the problem is that the NCAA doesn't have control of the football playoff. Was this just a weird year? In that, you know, the pandemic made December and January messy, and you really have a different field. I said that this would be a March Madness unlike any other. What did that have to do with what we ended up with in the Elite Eight or the Final Four? Did that play a bigger role or not? Nick Daschle of the Oregonian, he is the beat reporter who covers Oregon State, has done a terrific job this season capturing one of the best stories in the state, maybe in Oregon State's history. He's joining us now. Where does this rank, this Elite Eight, Daschle, on the totem pole of successes at Oregon State in athletics?
Well, we've been kind of tossing that one around a little bit. You know, you got the Giant Killers, the Fiesta Bowl team, the National Baseball Championships, the Women's Final Four. You know, had they got to the Final Four, I think it might have been right there at number, real close to number one, if not number one. It's up there. It's with those. I don't know that it beats out, you know, the Fiesta Bowl run just from a dollar standpoint and interest standpoint. I mean, the Fiesta Bowl brought so much stuff to Oregon State in terms of, you know, rebuild, you know, getting Reeser done, you know, prospective students that came to, you know, campus that might not have looked at Oregon State. I think this did some of that. I think getting to the Final Four would have probably been equal to the Fiesta Bowl.
Can they parlay this into more success next season? Will Wayne Tinkle be able to get into some living rooms and talk to some players that maybe he didn't have available to him before?
Oh, yeah, they already are. I know they're talking to a number of people, and you know how basketball is these days. I've been getting questions, you know, what's Oregon State's roster going to look like next year. I mean, in college basketball right now, you don't really know until, August, because guys are going to start going to the transfer portal. They're going to start looking at transfers. You know, they're in the portal. There's still the late signing period. I mean, there could be, you know, a half a dozen different names on this roster a year from now. I'm not saying that there will be, but there could be, just because there might be interest. The guys will start looking around going, I wonder if I got time coming. But I think overall, once the roster's set next year, I think it looks better than next year, even better than this last year. You know, even without Ethan Thompson and Zach Reichel left, because they've got some guys coming in that have some reputations, and I think Wayne has proven, you know, he can get these guys to play a level that he wants. And, I think it looks up. I mean, will there be another Elite Eight coming? That would be hard to predict that. But I think we can, you know, we can see more mid to fourth, third place finishes in the Pac-12. Maybe, you know, the occasional, maybe a run at a regular season title. I don't foresee that, you know, that would be a one-off. But certainly the NCAAs are, you would hope that maybe every third year or something like that, that would be a reasonable expectation now, if, you know, if everything stays together in this program.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and I think a key part of that is Wayne Tinkle's contract. What is his current contract? I know he was, because he made the NCAA field, he gets an additional year. How many years does he have right now, and where does that stand with Scott Barnes, the athletic director there?
Well, he had 2 years left on his contract before they made the NCAA tournament. The NCAA tournament kicked in a clause that gives him a third year that they'll need to negotiate the dollar amount, so he's got 3 years. And then it's just a matter of the two getting together and, you know, and coming up with some sort of an extension. You know, Scott has said he wants Wayne around, and you know, it's hard to say, you know, I don't know. It seems like this is something that should be done or either in the works by now. I don't know why you'd want to even risk losing Wayne to somebody else right now. You've been spending 30 years to get your guy since Ralph Miller. You've gone through a half a dozen coaches. You know, none of them have really worked out. Wayne has proven he can coach, you know, this team and get them to a fairly high level. Lock him up and get it done. I don't think he's looking for a bunch more money. I think he's looking for, you know, years. That's what I think. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I think that's what he's looking for. So, I don't know why it hasn't been done yet already, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If I'm the AD at Oregon State, I want momentum. That's your friend. You want to arm Wayne Tinkle with, you know, enough years so when he's recruiting players, they're not asking, hey, how many years do you have left? Like, you know, he needs to be able to say, look, I've got 5 years. I'm going to be here. If you come here and it takes you 4 or 5 years, I'm going to be here. I'm your coach. So if you're Scott Barnes, the AD at Oregon State, you need to get on that now and arm your guy. What about the bonuses? I've seen in some of your pieces you sort of allude to the fact that Tinkle had donated his bonuses back. When did that happen, and how much did he donate back?
Well, I mean, I guess that's what it's called. All the coaches agreed not to take their bonuses this year. So in Wayne's case, he donated, you know, $450,000 back to the school because he earns $150,000 for getting the team to the tournament and then $100,000 for each win in the tournament. So that's $300,000 in win bonuses and $150,000 in getting the team there. So it was a $450,000 bonus. Well, it's kind of surprising, though. Nowhere in his contract does he have a bonus for winning the Pac-12 tournament, which I think most guys have that in there. He has a big bonus for winning the regular season, but not one for actually winning the conference tournament. So, yeah, that's where all that comes. Yeah, that's where the bonuses came from in his contract.
He ends up donating that back to the university. He's probably happy to do it because, you know, look, it was a great run for his team and his future. What happened with the team after the game? We've talked about it a little bit on this show. Do you know anything more than they get back to the hotel, they've lost the game? Of course, they're not planning to pack because you don't tell your team, hey, pack in case we lose. You would never do that. But what happened with the NCAA and Oregon State leaving in the middle of the night?
Well, you know, it's unclear as to how the NCAA operates on all this stuff. It happens more often than I think everybody knows. But Oregon State got back to the hotel, and you know they were told they had a charter waiting for them to leave Indianapolis at 1:15 in the morning, and they got back. I'm trying to remember the times. It would have been, shoot, that game got over at 9:30 there, and then they had all sorts of issues with the NCAA post game thing. It was just terrible. They couldn't get the equipment to work right, and so they end up going back to the hotel and doing the press conference from the hotel. So it's probably like 11:30 by the time that all finished, and they just immediately, you know, the guys all packed their stuff, got some McDonald's. And got on a bus and went to the plane, and they were in Corvallis by 4 a.m. Now I think the same thing happened with Oregon women. They were in the same situation. They lost at night in San Antonio, and they were home by like 1:15 in the morning in Eugene. But it doesn't always happen this way. I know when Oregon State women went back, I went back with them to Albany 2 years ago. They lost, you know, it was probably 8 o'clock at night, maybe. I mean, we didn't leave until, like, close to noon the next day. So it's not something that always happens. And frankly, I don't know why it has to happen. I mean, it's, you know, just because this is the way they've done it doesn't mean it's, it has to happen that way.
Yeah, and I, the only thing I could think of, Dashiell, was, you know, you don't want a team that's not heavily invested in playing for something in the bubble, but they could have put them at a, you know, said, hey, look, you come back, but you can't interact with other teams, or you got to, you know, you can come back and you can stay in your rooms and you got to be out in the morning, but to have them leave at 1 a.m., it's like, you know, the most NCAA thing ever. What did you make of the Pac-12's performance? Is this a one-off, or do you feel like the Pac-12 is well positioned to rattle around the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight for the next couple of years?
Well, I mean, first of all, there's no reason why the Pac-12 shouldn't be one of the elite conferences in college basketball. I mean, there's a lot of talent on the West Coast, so the fact that they weren't any good is the surprising thing. They were positioned last year to get a half a dozen teams in the NCAAs, and you know, once you're there, I mean, if you got those numbers, odds are you're going to win some games. Just like the Big Ten had, what, 50,000 teams in the tournament this year. I mean, in a way, they lost a lot of games, but they won some. I think this shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, it will always be a surprise if the Pac-12 puts three teams in the Elite Eight. I think that's a surprise pretty much with any conference. That's a lot of teams, but. But the first and second round performances, to run the table, maybe not, but they should perform well in years to come. I mean, there'll be years where they're not as good, but I think overall they should be better than they have been, and I think they will be.
You know, we expected it maybe would be a down year for Oregon State. Trace Tinkle out of the program. Did the removal of his son allow for other players to blossom? Did they get some transfers or get some players that they might not have had if he were in the program? What dynamic did the departure of Trace Tinkle play in Oregon State's journey?
Well, I think it just opened doors to maybe transfers and recruits that, I don't know that it was Trace so much. It was just, at one point there was three sons there, three coaches' sons, and they were eating up, you know, anywhere between 90 and 100, you know, they ate up a lot of minutes. And, you know, when you're a recruit looking on the outside going, where's my time? Because, you know, these guys go to college basketball, that almost all of them think they're going to play in the league someday. And so they want to get on the floor. And when they see the coach's sons are starting three of the five spots, they're going to look elsewhere. So yeah, naturally the opportunity started opening up. And, you know, they got Ori Thalatish they thought highly of him, but I don't think anybody outside the program thought highly of him. And he proved to be a good one. And they've got some transfers coming in this next year that you know, are in the same situation. If one or two of those guys pan out, you know, they could be quite a bit better. You know, the bench guys really, really, you know, played a role, you know. Maurice Kalou, for example, he started the year, but then he found a spot on the bench where he could come in and give him some scoring. And Gianni Hunt proved really valuable coming off the bench and playing lead guard. You know, players like, they always seem to have a guy that you wouldn't think of that would play down the stretch anyway. They had a guy come off the bench that you just didn't think about would come in and really give him a boost, whether it was one of their post guys or their guards, just somebody would do that.
You're now pivoting to college football and spring football. Oregon State went early with spring football last year. They're going a little later. They start next week. Jonathan Smith and this program, what are you looking forward to in the spring?
Man, I got to start thinking about football. I've been all in on basketball for a while. I haven't given a lot. But obviously, the first thing is the quarterback situation. And again, I don't see guys winning jobs in the spring, but they can make a big push toward winning the job in August. And the quarterback situation is the one that will get a lot of attention, especially since Tristan Jebbia won't be participating much, if any, this spring. So the other two are going to get a lot of snaps with the ones and twos. That's one area. You kind of want to see what some of the running backs can offer now that Jefferson's out of the program. Defensively, what are they going to do to upgrade the defense? Because it was okay last year. It wasn't great. It was okay. It needs to be better. And I'm sure they would say the same thing. Let's see because they got a lot of guys there that they're looking for jobs. And that's what this spring will be all about. Let's see who fills some of those spots that they really need to step up on this defense.
Nick Daschle, you had a terrific season in basketball. Take a bow. I encourage people to follow Daschle on Twitter. Also, read him on Oregon Live and in the Oregonian. Daschle, have a great afternoon, and I appreciate you joining us.
All right, we'll see you. Thanks.
All right, there he is from Oregon Live. It'll be interesting to see how quickly Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State, pounces on the Wayne Tinkle extension. And I said it yesterday as I was a guest on this show yesterday in traveling, and I'll say it again today. The state of Oregon had the Oregon State men's program reach the Elite Eight. The Oregon women's program got to the Sweet 16. The Oregon men's program got to the Sweet 16. And the Oregon State women's program got to the second round of the NCAA tournament. Overall record 8-4 in the month of March at to the NCAA tournaments, the respective tournaments. It was a great showing for our state. Flirted with a Final Four. Oregon, if it hadn't just maybe been seated and placed in the same bracket as USC, may have reached the Elite Eight as well with the right matchup. And I think, if you're Kelly Graves, the Oregon Ducks women's coach, you got to be really happy with your team getting to the Sweet 16. And I certainly think Scott Ruick at Oregon State just got a really tough draw as an 8 seed, ended up playing a 1 seed in the second round of the tournament. Being an 8 is not easy. And so I think ultimately the state of Oregon, take a bow, take a victory lap, be proud of the teams in this state. Because here's what I think is going to happen moving forward. Kelly Graves at Oregon with the women's program, I think they're going to come back next season with a little bit of tournament experience and a young team that's a year older. Scott Ruick at Oregon State in the women's program, you just got to pencil him into the NCAA tournament. You know he's a top 3 team in the Pac-12 every year, and he has a shot to get to the Sweet 16 every year. Like, if you look at his history and getting to the Sweet 16 over and over and over and over again, I think you can say that Oregon State women's program is a power in women's college basketball. Dana Altman at Oregon. Dana Altman next season is going to have 4 players on his roster that are 6'10" or bigger. They're going big. They've got the young kid from Southern Oregon who's drawing comparisons to Chris Boucher. You've got certainly this team back. If Infale Dante comes back healthy with the leg injury, I think Oregon's going to be really good. And Dana Altman just continues to reinvent himself every year. And I think, you know Oregon's going to be back next year. You know Oregon's going to be good next year. They'll matter in the Pac-12 conference. And Oregon State with Wayne Tinkle. Unless Scott Barnes screws this up. Unless the athletic director at Oregon State is tone deaf and just screws this up, Wayne Tinkle should be extended in the next couple of days. That needs to be shouted from the mountaintops. Let recruits hear it, because Oregon State men's program needs to position itself in a sport where 1 or 2 players can absolutely make a huge difference. Needs to position itself right now as a team going somewhere and a program going somewhere. While UCLA and Gonzaga and Baylor and Houston play this thing out, and to me, it looks like we're headed to a Gonzaga-Baylor final. I don't think Houston's good enough to get there. But as you watch this play out, you ultimately have to ask yourself, can these teams in the state of Oregon continue to matter? And what can the administrators at their respective schools do to get out of the way and let momentum do what momentum does? Our big splash is coming up. What is it? Stick around and find out. There are a few things that appear to be more carefree than somebody doing a cartwheel. You know what I mean? Like, my six-year-old did a cartwheel in the backyard yesterday. And I thought to myself, like, that is a carefree thing. Like, that's the kind of thing, when you see a cartwheel, you go, hey, you know what? Everything's going to be all right. You know, you could just, and I put it on my story on Instagram today. I put a picture of the coast, and I said, look, I don't know if you need to hear this, but everything's going to be all right. Because I think some people need to hear that sometimes, that everything will work out, everything will be okay in the end. It'll all end with a cartwheel. And because when you're 6 years old doing a cartwheel in your backyard, that's a carefree thing. That's like no worries in the world. There are some worries for the NCAA, though, today. And it is the subject of our big splash.
This is
the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. Must be
the big splash. Brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer.
Well, the justices of the Supreme Court of the United States are mixing it up with the NCAA today. Supreme Court heard more than 90 minutes of oral arguments this morning. The NCAA versus Alston is the case. It's the first time that the high court in the nation has weighed in on the business of college athletics. It's been four decades since they even considered it. The question in front of the court is whether the NCAA deserves special relief from normal antitrust rules that protect the educational mission and preserve amateurism. Now, the court is expected to make a ruling sometime in the late spring or early summer, but essentially, the NCAA, can they provide their athletes compensation? Right now, it's illegal for the NCAA to provide compensation. Now, the judge's rulings in this Alston case says that, you know, you can give unlimited benefits as long as they're related to education. It gets tricky here. You can do classroom equipment. You can do study abroad. You can do funding for post-grad internships and cash payments for academic achievements. But this is going to threaten amateurism. Now, the Supreme Court today, as they heard some of this testimony, they simultaneously were grilling the NCAA, but also expressing concerns about the slippery slope, right? The destruction of an American tradition. Amateurism, college athletics, that's all up in the air right now as the Supreme Court is looking at this. So it's going to be really tricky. But I think the problem here for the NCAA ultimately comes back to money. What has happened in the last 40 years? College sports, athleticism of college athletes has now been monetized to the point where it's not just a little bit of money. It's not that they're making a little money. They're making a lot of money. Look at the Pac-12 and about $40 million that the Pac-12 is going to make from this NCAA tournament alone, from having teams play so deep in the tournament. They got a bunch of shares. The Pac-12 teams are going to split up $40 million, and none of that will go directly to athletes, although athletes will benefit as the programs are better and the resources are better and all that. So I think the biggest problem for the NCAA is trying to guard and defend amateurism out one side of your mouth while you are crowing about the money that's available and the money that you're chasing out the other side of your mouth. You have great facilities. You're paying coaches $6 million a year, $8 million a year in some cases in football. And so you have all this money and this investment in facilities and infrastructure and coaches and personnel. And everybody can see that money floating around. It's not like it's quietly happening. $40 million will be split for this NCAA tournament among the 12 Pac-12 members. So how do you do that while also saying, hey, you're amateurs and we want to hide behind antitrust rules? So I think it's going to be really tricky for the Supreme Court to fix this with like one ruling. I'm really interested because I think it's going to change what you think of amateurism. It's going to change what you think of college athletics, no matter what they decide. If they uphold it, if they say, no, you should pay or you should share. If they say, no, you can't hide behind antitrust laws. I think you got a problem if you're college athletics. This is going to be a shapeshifter either way. Keep an eye on it. All right. We have some news on the NFL front. We'll talk to the NFL in the next hour. If you're a college football fan, spring football, well underway. What do you want to learn at Oregon State, and other Pac-12 schools in the spring? What does the college football landscape look like?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced
Truth. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.